Jetstreamers, and welcome to this review of the Newcastle Jets Round 19 A-League clash against Western Sydney Wanderers, as well as the preview of the A-League's Round 20 clash against Melbourne Victory, and the preview of the W-League squad's Round 13 game against Melbourne Victory. My name is Luke, and joining me today is one of our regulars, Andy. Thanks for coming on, Andy.
No worries at all, Luke. Good to be here as always.
We might potentially also be fighting some storms. Andy isn't sure if he's got some storms up his way, which may cause havoc, but we will play it by ear and see how we go tonight. Opening question. So we're recording this on the Monday, so day earlier than what we usually do. Sunday night, they had the Fire Aid concert down in Sydney, where they raised $9.5 million. Andy, did you watch any of it? And if so, what was your favourite act or act you wish you had seen?
Yeah, so I was able to catch majority of sort of the end of the concert from about 6 o'clock onwards. And one of the ones I really liked was Queen. I thought it was cool to see them out there. I didn't think that Adam Lambert did too bad of a job of, you know, playing the Freddie Mercury role. Not that you could ever replace that guy, but yeah, he did well.
Yeah, I didn't see the Queen performance. I did catch a little clip of it on the news tonight, and as you said, I don't think Adam Lambert could ever replace Freddie, but if they were going to get anyone to do the Freddie role, I think Adam Lambert's a pretty good choice to take on that role. Didn't see much of it. I caught maybe the last hour or so. When I turned it on, Hilltop Hoods had literally just ended. They were thanking him on stage. I was like, damn, that was the one I really wanted to see. But I saw Katie Lang and Icehouse, and I thought they were pretty good as well. And I think I missed. I don't remember if I saw the John Farnham, Olivia Newton-John part of it. But if anyone else watched it, did you go down to the concert? If you were there, let us know how it was on the ground and who your favorite act of the night was. Let's talk some football. Round 19, Jets against Western Sydney Wanderers is our first trip down to Bankwest Stadium, the new stadium, the new home ground of Western Sydney Wanderers. 1-1 the score finished. A goal in the first half, penalty to Mitch Duke for the Wanderers, and an equaliser from Matt Miller in the second half to give us a 1-1 draw. Some stats on the game. Jets possession 55.6%, Wanderers with 44.4%. Shots were fairly even. Jets 20 with 8 on target, Western Sydney with 17 shots and 7 on target. It was a special game for another reason, Andy. It was Carl Robinson's first game in charge of the club. Big occasion. First time down in at Bankwest Stadium. What were your expectations on Carl's first game? Did you expect him to have an immediate impact, or do you think we might sort of see the same sort of performances for the next little bit while the team gets into Carl's style of coaching and his routine and his tactics and everything?
Yeah, well, I guess one of the things was when Carl came in, one of the first things he said was that he wasn't here to change too much, that he'd pretty much take the rest of the season to work out what the best way to set up the team that we had was. And, you know, at this time, he's reintroducing players like Roy into the squad who haven't played with, like the team that Roy played with before was a little bit different. So for Roy to be coming into the squad, and I don't think you can really expect Carl Robinson to change too much and make too much of a difference. It's the old sort of cliche, but it's not really his squad. So until he is able to actually bring on his own players, then how is he going to actually, you know, put his own stamp on it and be judged by his decisions?
Absolutely. And as you said, with him not being able to get his squad in, the transfer window has closed. So I guess at this point in time, he's kind of stuck with the players he's got now until at least the end of the season, bar any major injury, which would require an injury replacement. But even then, I think our options would be fairly limited in any sort of signing potential there. In terms of the lineup, there was only the one change to the starting 11, which was Thurgate coming in for the injured Kanarovsky. Is that pretty much what you expected? Moss came back into the squad. He was on the bench. Did you think that if Moss was fit, he'd go straight into the 11? Or were you sort of thinking Italiano's probably got this down for another week?
I think the biggest thing is definitely with the fact that Glenn Moss announced pretty much his retirement, or he announced his retirement and then has come back a lot quicker than people probably thought. So therefore I feel that Italiano has to be given a chance, because there may not be too many options to bring someone else in, and Italiano might end up being the one that we have for next season. So if Carl Robinson is essentially putting the squad on trial for the next few months whilst we see this season out, of course he's going to stick with Italiano for the foreseeable future. But yeah, for Angus Thurgate to come on again, I'd say Kanarovsky's going to have to work a bit to try and get back into this squad with the players that we have coming back.
Yeah, the players coming back, we'll go into a bit more on that when we talk about the preview for the Victory game this coming weekend. It was a bit of a delayed start to Robinson's first game. The storms in Western Sydney, and if you watched the telecast or were at the game, you would have seen how horrific it was. Storms hit pretty much right on kickoff. There was footage of Simon Hill and Robbie Slater standing outside with umbrellas. It's a wonder the umbrellas survived and that they didn't get zapped, because by all accounts, it was a pretty hectic storm. So it was about a 20-minute delay. Do you think that may have had an impact on the players? Or do you think that this level, that sort of thing shouldn't affect their mentality? They should be able to just get on with the job whenever.
Yeah, I think you'd definitely hope that at this level it's just another delay and that they'd be used to it. I'm sure for Carl Robinson, he was probably a bit, you know, frustrated and just wanted to get into it. But it seems to be the thing when a Jets team goes to Bankwest. The same thing happened with the W League, if I'm not mistaken, where it was crazy storms and they had to delay. That one was 15, 20 minutes. But it's just about that management and the fitness of, yeah, warming up and then trying not to cool down in that 15, 20 minute period.
Yeah, absolutely. I dare say they probably would have done some exercises inside within the stadium, but yeah, it was a bit of a hectic start and it looked like it was pretty wet down there in Sydney. From the start of the game, from kickoff, it was pretty much all Western Sydney from the get-go. One of the main clashes on the park was down our left-hand side with Burns versus Kamau. Did you sort of see that as a potential bogey spot for us, with Kamau's speed bursting through Burns? Or there was a couple of times before the Wanderers took the lead that Burns got beaten by Kamau, and it just sort of looked like we were on the back foot and we were two steps behind where they were. Did you see that, Andy, or was there another clash that you saw that sort of got us on the wrong foot to start off the game?
No, it was definitely the clash between Kamau and Burns that was the one, and we saw so very early on. It was like 3 minutes in when Bobby Burns conceded that penalty to, you know, give the Wanderers their first goal, and he just absolutely lost Bruce Kamau and had to really make up ground, and it looked like just a tangle of bodies that, you know, he had to make a decision. Do I try and stop him at the risk of a penalty, or do I let him go and pretty much have a one-on-one shot? So it was an interesting decision, but I guess I can see why it was made.
Yeah, it was. I think in the whole lead up to that penalty, as soon as Kamau had burned past him, I was thinking, this is going to end up a penalty. It was just stuck in my mind. Oh my God, they're going to get a penalty from this. And sure enough, they did. Mitchell Duke stepped up and buried it to give the Wanderers a one-goal lead within the first 5 minutes. At that point, we hadn't really looked in it at all. We were struggling to pick passes, struggling to get out of our own back line. even then we were, our backline under no pressure at all would turn it over. Did you sort of sense that this might carry on for the rest of the game, or did you think we get ourselves back into it after conceding that early goal?
Yeah, it was something that Carl Robinson actually discussed in his post-match conference, was that the Jets over the time that he'd been watching had been very slow to start. And that was, again, evident in this game. They were just seemed to, whether it was the delay or what have you, there was just that sort of switch off in the early minutes. And much better teams than the Wanderers are going to really punish us. And realistically, it could have been 2-3 nil within that first little period if it wasn't for, you know, the Wanderers just not being all that together at the moment. So we ended up escaping that pretty well, that first little period.
Yeah, absolutely. Just talking about the chances there, they did have a number of chances. There's one I can remember in particular from Cox, who outside the box just managed to get past, I think it was Katrumbis or Topper Stanley, and get a shot off that went straight into Italiano. But there were plenty of danger signs. And as you said, if we're coming up against Sydney or even Melbourne City, if McLaren's in form, these teams at the top of the ladder, they will punish us for giving away those chances. Like, it was apparent as to why the Wanderers are sort of down towards our end of the table, just not being able to bury chances. And Italiano did make a few good saves, but I think it just came down to them just not being clinical enough in front of goal.
Yeah, that was definitely the case that I saw, that, you know, Mitch Duke is a great player, but if he was, you know, at 100%, we would be talking about a very different result here, I feel.
Yeah, it was definitely some nerves towards the start of the game there. It was about 20 minutes in, though, that we looked like we were finally getting into gear, that we were finally able to settle ourselves and play the ball a bit. Again, there was another incident on the left with Burns. He picked up a yellow card around the 20th minute for another clash with Kamau, I think it was, where Kamau's just burned him and he's tried to clear it and just completely missed the ball and just got Kamau around the thighs. At that point, did you think we were potentially going to be seeing finish the game with 10, or did you think that it was the sort of thing we needed for Burns to get his head straight and to play a bit safer on the park?
No, I 100% thought that we were going to see Bobby Burns get a yellow and then either get pulled to sort of save him from himself, or it would be a case where he would get a second yellow in quick succession and we would be playing with 10 men. So he, whilst being a great player, just Kamau absolutely had it over him for this game.
Well, there was a sub later on in the second half, which we'll get to. As the first half went on, we did see a number of chances fall our way. There was one with O'Donovan where he fouled Lopar trying to get a high ball. There was another one with some good link-up play with Miller down the right-hand side, who sort of just scuffed his shot, or he was trying to just place it a bit too much with the Wanderers defender coming through, that it's just gone straight to Lopar. As the first half went on towards halftime, were you sort of thinking that we need to get a goal now before halftime, or were you thinking if we can maintain this pressure now and start the second half just the same way, we can go on with it from there?
Yeah, I wasn't too worried about scoring before halftime, because one of the things that you definitely see from Carl Robinson is that he seems to be very articulate in the way that he speaks, and I feel that without obviously being in the dressing room, he would definitely be that coach that would make sure that at halftime he addresses either the players as a group or individually in the areas that they need to improve in the game. So I wasn't too worried if we were to go into halftime behind. What I was more worried about was not long before halftime, when Mitch Duke got through and there was another horrendous clearance from Italiano. So I'm not sure what the key is there. But Luis Italiano has really good distribution with his hands. He can throw the ball out well, but if he has to do it with his feet, it seems to not really work out that well in those situations. And again, better teams would punish us for that.
I just kept having flashbacks throughout that first half with some of his clearances to the Mariners game the week before and his assist with Chris Harrold for the Mariners' third goal. And I was like, it's going to happen again. I can't stand this. It's going to happen again. We're going to concede the same way. Moss will be in next week and he'll probably get injured. And then, yeah, the routine, the circle of life starts again. But I guess we'll go into the second half in a sec. Really, we finished the first half on top. We finished with a number of corners in a row where we were sort of unlucky not to get a couple more, thanks to some questionable officiating where the ball clearly went out and the linesman and the referee said play on. That was just before halftime. I think it was in the second minute of injury time, and the Wanderers got the ball upfield, and it sort of looked like they were going to, it was going to be the typical, right, well, we should have had a corner there, but they're going to run the field and score. Are we lucky that that didn't get to that point, or do you think that if they had scored there, we would have had the VAR overturn it?
Yeah, I don't really know what to think with that. There was another, I just have it in my notes as the 46th minute, so I don't know if that was before or after halftime, but there was an opportunity from Topper Stanley that I was surprised VAR didn't have a look at. You had a what seemed to be a pretty clear contact on Nicolai, and then also a fairly confident shout for handball from just about our entire front line, and VAR didn't even seem to have a look at it. And even after the, you know, Simon Hill in commentary sort of said, oh, there may be a cause for that, to have a look at it. And I don't know, maybe it goes back to one thing I've said a few times where I'd like to see it if VAR is going to stay, that there was a certain allowance for the captain to go and say, look, similar to cricket, I'd like you to review that, even if gameplay continues and the ref just says to the VAR, hey, look, we've been asked to review this. Can you have a look at it and tell me, just so we have the clarity? But yeah, it's one of those things, like VAR is very prominent for a week and then you have a week where it's not talked about. So what do you do?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think that was at the start of the second half, that penalty call. And as you said, it could have gone three ways. There was the foul on Topper, there was the handball that, if you go back throughout the season, there's been handballs given the exact same as that. I think back to the Jets City game in January, I believe it was, where Topper Stanley was adjudged to have handballed it, despite the fact that the ball hit him from behind his back and he wasn't looking at it. You know, it's that sort of thing where there's just seems to be so much inconsistency about it that that's why there's so much drama. If it was at least consistent and everything was done the exact same way, you'd be like, right, well, we know that's happened, but it's almost a, you know, a roulette of, okay, well, it's hit someone's hand. Is it going to be given a handball, or is it going to be play on? Because yeah, it just seems every week the rules or the what they check around handball in the box for VAR changes.
Yeah, which I guess comes back to the whole discussion around what the FFA are trying to do with actually making the audio available from the VAR. So very similar to what they do in rugby league, or maybe a bit of a hybrid option where, you know, the decision is explained then and there, or even if the refs were mic'd up and they could go to them and the ref explains to the captain, look, this is the reason why it hasn't been given or whatever else, just because you sit there wondering like what has actually happened in the game, and it makes it so much harder to tolerate this thing that no one really understands.
Everyone thinks they're an expert on it, and I absolutely do not think I am. But yeah, it's so hard to accept this technology when, as you said, it just changes every week, and there is at the moment no real transparency about it. Yeah, the FFA and Fox have released some clips where the referee has spoken about what's happened, and that's always been viewed with a lot of positivity, but until we have that transparency for a lot of these decisions, there's always going to be questions from people about whether things are or whether things aren't, until we can get some, I guess, consistency with the technology.
Yeah, but I guess too, it doesn't even seem as though like a decision goes to that. And like, it's funny that we're talking about it and it wasn't even a, you know, VAR decision, but yet here we are. It doesn't even seem as though the ref is talking to the captain or the player involved and saying, this is the decision and why it's come to. Like, everyone just seems like it's this one little voice in the referee's head that says, this is what it is. And, you know, they leave it at that. So definitely something to look at in the future, I guess.
I think some of that also just comes down to whoever's officiating, because you'd get some referees, and probably the better ones that are in the league, who would at least look to have some conversation with the captains about it. But there didn't seem to be any of that on the weekend. It just sort of was like brushed away as not happening, which I guess, you know, given it wasn't even chalked up on, like the little VAR thing wasn't on the screen, I guess, you know, so be it. But anyway, well, enough about that. We could go on forever about the VAR and the referees. One thing that I sort of picked up on that I thought had a game-changing aspect to it, Andy, was in the 60th minute, Burns was subbed off for Hoffman. He looked good on the weekend. He looked really hungry, Hoff. He looked like someone who had been dropped and wanted to get his place in the squad back. Did you see that performance from him?
Yeah, I certainly did. And I think one of the things is that I don't know if it's that they've had the conversation with Hoff and said, look, if you're going to make it in this team with Roy coming back and other players coming back, that your position is going to be in a fullback role that you played for so long. Whether he likes playing there or not is kind of irrelevant, because he has a contract and therefore has a job to do. But yeah, I definitely think with it being known that the club's preference is for Bobby Burns to go back to Hearts at the end of the season, if I was Jason Hoffman, I'd be wanting to look at that position and going, well, how can I push him out? And one of the things that Bobby Burns has is obviously the ability to drop the ball on the penalty spot every time without fail. But then you've got Hoffman, who is a much more physical, you know, he's taller, he can run arguably faster and has that goal scoring feat. So I guess if he can put all that together consistently, you have him and Matt Miller either side, that's a pretty enticing little operation.
Yeah, he did bomb forward a lot, like Miller does, and that's not to say Bobby didn't this game, he got forward like he always does, but it just seemed that he was able to get around the Wanderers players a bit easier, and he just seemed a little bit more explosive today than Burns has been, especially considering his performance the previous couple of weeks against the Mariners and Western United. It wasn't too long after Hoff came on that the Jets did equalise. Down the other flank, it went to Matt Miller, who had a good one too with Roy on the edge of the box, played it out to Miller to the Jets' right of goal, and then was able to slot it past Lopar at the near post. Would you say that was deserved, long overdue from us? And would you also think that was a bit of a poor save from Lopar? Because we've seen some of the saves he's made throughout the season, especially in the two games against us. And some of the balls that have been saved by him, this just seemed like it was one of the easier ones that he could have got to and didn't necessarily need to go in.
Yeah, I guess he's one of those players that seems to always go for the spectacular and usually pulls it off. But then I think even Bozza said on the match day Saturday that you would expect a keeper of his quality to get to that just about every time and close down that angle. But yeah, great lead up to that for Dimmy to actually not go himself, but create the opportunity, pass the ball off to Miller, and Miller was able to play that little 1-2 with Roy and get in that opportunity. But I guess one of the concerning things is, if I'm not mistaken, our leading goal scorer for the season is our right back at the moment. So hopefully we can return that to equilibrium soon.
Well, he's almost there. That was Miller's third goal of the season, which if you're pushing for the title, you want your midfielders and your fullbacks and your centre-backs to be providing goals. But when we've scored 14 goals this season, our top scorer is Dimi on 5, and then second is Miller, our right back, on 3. There's some questions you've got to be asking about who's been up front, and that might necessarily not just be the, you know, who's up there, but the quality of, I guess, the balls and chances they've had in front of goal. You know, all season we've been looking at the, if you look at the stats, nearly every game will be 20 shots on goal and 4 or 5 on target. So it seems to be that, you know, our finishing is something that we need, but also just where we're shooting from, because there's some games where it looks like we're just shooting from 25 meters out, just hoping for the best, and that works sometimes, but we haven't really had anyone in the team, bar say Zadkovic 10 years ago and Dimi in recent times, who can consistently hit a ball from 20, 25 meters out and get it on target and in the goals enough. So, yeah, it was, yeah, Miller's third goal. Put us 1-1 with 16-plus injury time left. From there, did you think we could go on to win, or did you think that the Wanderers would give us some trouble in the last 15 minutes?
I didn't really see anything in the last little 15 minutes that I thought was going to guarantee us a win. But what I did think is that, and it's been sort of the story of both the A-League and W-League teams, where they get into this position where you sit there thinking, oh, 5-10 minutes more and we would have been talking about a win for the Jets. So that was, again, this game. And I don't know if it's that they make up for the 5-10 minutes they lose at the start of every game by starting slowly, that, you know, they sort of get to that crescendo of the game and have another 5-10 minutes of energy in them, but the clock just runs out. But overall, a pretty healthy performance.
Well, that's the score it finished with, 1-1 at full time. Do you see that as 1 point gained or 2 points lost?
I'm going to definitely say 2 points lost on that one. You've got the Wanderers, who are struggling to even score goals, and yeah, to go down their new stadium, all that, I don't think it really plays too much into it. Sure, it's a bit more vocal crowd down there than what they've had in the past, as they've been at Spotless and wherever else. But yeah, there's no excuses in a team that's down, well, still above us, but down the lower end of the ladder. You would think that we would have come away with a bit more, but I guess happy that it wasn't a loss.
Yeah, I thought of it as 2 points lost as well. Yeah, well, it ended a run of 4 consecutive wins for us against the Wanderers, going back to the start of the previous season. But we also maintain, I believe it's an 8-game undefeated run against the Wanderers, which included the 3 games from the grand final season for us. It did have an effect on the spoon, however, Andy. The Mariners were rightfully returned to their rightful place at the foot of the ladder. How do you feel about that?
I am obviously very happy that the Central Coast are down there, but it now needs to be a case of up from here. We can't be happy with the fact that we're in temp. We need to be moving up, and I think that the teams above us are having inconsistent performances, and at the moment Brisbane Roar's put a little bit of a gap for the top 6, so we need to be focused on going up. We don't want to be playing playoff matches to get into the FFA Cup and all this sort of stuff. We want to actually do well in the next season, and the FFA Cup, in my mind, is going to be the paramount thing to having that success.
It's good you touched on Brisbane there and their run. I guess it goes to show that even in the league, even in our league, regardless of how bad you've been in patches, if you can put a string of, say, 3-4 wins together in a row, you put yourself in a good position for finals. It's something we need. We're about 8 to 10 points off finals as it currently stands, with I think maybe 7 or 8 games left in the season.
Yeah, and I guess too, it like the league table at the moment goes to show you've got Brisbane Roar, who is string together, you know, 5 or 6 wins and gone from 10th, 11th, right up there to 6th. And then you've got Western United in 7th, who started strong and then have capitulated and dropped right back down. Like they were as high as 2nd or 3rd at some point, and now they're down to 7th and falling. So just goes to show what a handful of results going your way can do in the Hyundai A-League.
That's absolutely right. Before we go into the round 20 preview, Matt Miller did make the A-League team of the week for this round. It's his second week in a row in the A-League team of the week. So congrats to Matty Miller. Another great performance, and we are very lucky to have him in our team this season.
Yeah, I definitely think that Matt Miller is a player that we can really build a squad around and is going to be good for us for the foreseeable future.
So looking ahead, we've got Melbourne Victory this weekend at home at McDonald Jones Stadium this Saturday, February 22nd, kickoff at 7:30 p.m. Andy, the Victory, they're currently coming off the bye. They didn't play over the weekend. And they have some Asian Champions League commitments this week. They play in Seoul Tuesday night. How will the travel to Korea affect them in this match? Do you think, given they've had a week off, it shouldn't affect them too much? Or is it always a case of when you travel away for the Champions League, there's always some lethargy coming back from the Asia trips?
Yeah, I haven't actually seen the squad that they've taken over with them, but with, you know, not doing that well in the league, maybe the Victory higher ups have said, we're not doing too well in the A-League, let's just put that where it is, let's do a good run in Asia, kind of like the Wanderers did the year that they won it. So midweek game in Korea, I guess that puts them back maybe Thursday or Friday. So worst case scenario, could probably squeeze a morning session in before they travel to Newcastle. I don't know if they'll fly back into Melbourne and then fly up to Newcastle, or if they'll come straight back into Sydney and maybe head back up to Newcastle. But it looks like Storm Roo's still out. I think Cruz was either carrying a knock or is out altogether, and Naboo's been pretty inconsistent. So I guess if we're going to take our chance, this is the best time to take it.
We do have one of the many danger men that seem to destroy us anytime they play us up against us this weekend in Marco Rojas. This is his first game against us since he's returned from his Euro trip. Do you think even though Cruz is out, would you say Rojas is on par or above or below what Cruz would do to us? Because when we played him in what I'm pretty sure was Ernie's last game, Cruz just decided to have the game of his life against us and tore us a new one. So are you expecting somewhat similar from Rojas, or do you think that with Cruz out, that's a lot of their danger gone?
Yeah, I actually I forgot that they re-signed Rojas because you haven't really heard much of him. I expected him to come back and just absolutely turn it on, and from what I've heard, that hasn't really been the case. But with Robbie Cruz, as you mentioned, when we played them down in Melbourne, he absolutely turned it on, and he was playing quite well before he started getting those injuries that I think was his hamstring and third or fourth time that he's done it in as many years. So it'll be interesting to see what'll come, but if he does play, I just can't imagine him being too effective in this game.
I don't think he'll be in the squad. I think he's was ruled out for a few weeks, so I think he might be another week or two off returning to the Victory squad for now. But as you said, Storm Roo, he was injured in their Champions League game the other week against Chiang Rai United. They do still have other power. They've got Andrew Naboot. You mentioned before he hasn't been in fantastic form. He sort of looked like he's been playing with an injury in that Champions League game. But they've also got Ola Toivonen, and he's just got the quality about him that it doesn't really matter where on the park he is. He can always create something, whether it's assists or putting balls through to others or scoring himself. He's probably one of the real danger men in the league.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing too is just looking at the weather forecast for Saturday. It looks like 23 and scattered sort of showers, so hopefully it'll be the right climate, and the pitch seemed to hold up well from the rain last week and the rugby match, so hopefully it'll be a good spectacle.
Well, going to our potential ins slash outs, Robinson said during the post-game post-match conference that Houlihan would be back within 7 to 14 days. Do you think we'll see him this week, or do you think it'll be another week before we see Wessie back in a Jets jersey?
I think it'll be another week, and the reason for that is I feel that Carl Robinson will want to have Houlihan completely fit, ready to go, and come off the bench and make an impact in a game. That's not to say he may totally miss out. He might be in the squad but not actually get a run on, or it might be a case where he gets a few minutes. But the other thing is, with an injury around his knee or whatever it was, do you really want to risk him on what could be a fairly wet and slippery surface if the rain keeps up for the rest of this week? I just would err on that side of caution, and another week's not going to make a massive difference.
And it's funny you mentioned the, you know, erring on the side of caution with his ankle and everything, because when they announced that he was going to be in this, like he was announced in the pre-match squad the other week against Western United, it seemed a bit surreal. Like, it didn't really seem like he was actually back, given reports a couple of weeks earlier with that he was still 4 to 6 or 6 to 8 weeks away, for them to then come out 2 weeks later and be like, actually, he's in the squad. It just didn't really make any sense. And as you said, at this point, you know, another week, we're better off having him fully fit rather than 90% and potentially getting injured on what could be a somewhat dangerous surface. Although in saying that, the surface the other week, as you mentioned, against the Mariners, it held up pretty well. So I guess, you know, it may not be too much of an issue compared to, say, 10 years ago before we got the ground development for the Asian Cup.
Yeah, my opinion is it's not worth the risk, like, to play him in one game where there's plenty of other players that can make a difference. We do need to go on a run, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But, yeah, I just think the opportunity cost is too high to put him out there and risk an injury. As you said, if he's even 99%, there's that 1% margin of error, and therefore we run the risk of him being out even more long term. So let's wait it out.
Looking at our squad for this weekend, Kenarowski will still be out with his injury. Moss, he was on the bench against Western Sydney. I guess looking around the rest of the squad, do you see any potential changes to the starting 11? Or do you think we're sort of caught up in the exact same conundrum we've had for most of the season, where whoever's playing will generally be playing the following week because we don't really have the depth to bring someone else in that could change the team too drastically?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a decent shout. One thing that my brain sort of thinks might work is if you were to give, say, Hoffi a start in that left back position, but for Bobby Burns to be, you know, believed to be going at season's end and returning to Hearts, you'd think, is it worth keeping Bobby in the squad if he's not going to be here long term? But then we need the results, so who's the better player? But that'd be the only change I could possibly see. I don't see any changes up front or in the midfield, and everything else in defence is doing pretty well.
So you reckon Italiano still keeps his starting spot and Moss goes back onto the bench?
Yeah, I would say that that would be the case. I think Italiano, he made a few good saves and we came away with a draw in the end. Had we lost, it might have been a different discussion. But yeah, I would say he'd keep it for this week. And for Moss was meant to be out for 4 weeks and it ended up only being two of that. So I'm not fully convinced that he's completely back up. Maybe he could do a job if called on, if Italiano got hurt or something. But with Noah James out with his hand injury and stuff like that, is Glenn Moss simply there to fill a spot? You don't really know.
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, we talk about giving youth a chance as well, but you also don't want to throw them in the deep end if they're not ready for it. And they might think that it might just be a case of the club thinks that we're better off having a slightly injured Mossy on the bench rather than potentially getting Keegan Hughes out there and having him well out of his depth and, you know, expose him too early or whatever it may be. But I think you're right. I think Italiano will keep his spot, but I also think he's got to be very cautious that he doesn't give away any more assists to the opposition, because if Mossy's in the frame, and even though he may be retiring at the end of the season, we need results, and if Moss is our best option to keep a clean sheet, then you know, we'd probably need to have whoever is our best option out there to get the results so we can finish as high as possible.
Yeah, and I guess it would be, you know, if we know for sure that Glenn Moss is going at the end of the season, which he's announced retirement, I mean, he could do a John Farnham and go around again. But if he is going, then really in this period we need to look at, is Italiano up to it long term? And if not, who are we going to bring in? Do we upgrade our goalkeeper, or do we, you know, stick with him and look to bring in Noah James or a Keegan Hughes through under him?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the other option is if the club doesn't think that he is that option, do we look at someone like Beerers, who may be off contract at the Mariners, or see what Jack Duncan's up to and see if he's able to get back here? But it's all stuff that I'm sure the club was already on the case of, and we'll be drastically trying to make sure we have the best options available for next season. So Victory are 3 points ahead of us going into this game. As I said before, this Saturday night, February 22nd, 7:30 p.m. at McDonald Jones Stadium. Andy, what are your predictions for the game? Who do you think will win? Scores? What are you thinking?
So I'm going to go with a 3-1 victory for the Jets with goals from Matt Miller, Stevie UG and Dimmy. I whacked that into Sportsbet a bit earlier and they're paying $14.85 for the Jets to win and the correct score of 3-1. So gamble responsibly and have a crack. But at the end of the day, I'm not responsible for how you spend your money.
I was going to say, at least you got the gamble responsibly in there. So, I feel like it's going to be close. I feel like regardless of who Victory have playing in the Champions League on Tuesday, I just think they're going to, like, if Rojas is playing, the front three, four players of Kim Soba, Naboot, Toivonen, they're going to cause us some trouble. We just need to make sure that they don't just counter us nonstop and they just keep breaking through and we have the same sort of scorelines we had back when Ernie was on his last legs against Perth and stuff. I think we win. I think we'll win. I think we will have the legs to get through the game. I think it'll be, I'm going to say 2-1. I think Roy's going to get his first goal back. And I sort of agree with you that I think Matt Miller will score. He's just always seems to be in those positions where he's either getting an assist in or he's scoring a goal. So I'm going to say 2-1 with goals to Donovan and Miller. That's not the only game we have against Victory this weekend. W League Girls are playing Victory Sunday 4 p.m. at number 2 Sports Ground. W League Girls have just come off a bye in round 12. There's only 2 games left of the season. Unfortunately, our girls are out of finals contention. They're currently on 7 points, I believe. They're coming up against the Victory side, who will be looking to secure final spot with a victory here. How do you think we'll sort of go for this? Because we've been looking really positive in the last few weeks. The results might not have been there, but they've given trouble to teams up around the top of the ladder. Do you think this is something that we can, you know, look to try and finish the season on a high and also knock out a team or put a dent in their finals chances? Or do you think that Victory are just going to power on and claim a final spot for themselves?
Yeah, I unfortunately think it will be a game where Victory will just turn it on. They'll look to, as you said, sort of make that statement of why they're to move on and do well. I think that for our team, it's more just about focusing now on finishing this season out, doing well, maybe get a result against Adelaide in the last game of the season, and then just straight away work out who's going to be here next year, who's going to not, where they're going to go and all that sort of stuff. So we can, yeah, really next season, I think with another season under its belt, this W League side can hopefully get up there and maybe not make the finals, but definitely be in that, you know, fifth or sixth spot.
Yeah, it's been a disappointing season for them. I think there's been some absolute highlights, though. I think Tara Andrews being up there with the top of the goal scoring ladder, I think, is really positive. To have someone who's been playing in our local league for the last couple of years to come and do it on the national stage is fantastic. We've also seen some other local girls come in and give it a good run. We've seen some cracking goals, especially that one, I think it was against Perth. You mentioned that we play Adelaide in the last round. We are only 3 points ahead of them with 2 games left. Adelaide have the bye this round. Do you think that might be motivation to try and get a result this week and not leave it to the last game to avoid the spoon? Or do you think that there it's just sort of go out there and just get the game done?
I by no means don't think the girls will put in an effort, but I certainly feel that, you know, Victory usually start to turn it on a little bit more as the season goes on and starts to get towards finals. They start to really come out and make that statement. And, you know, with having the recent win against Adelaide, we'll feel confident going against them. One thing I'll pick up on that you said too, Luke, is with Tara Andrews, she is obviously doing well with the goal scoring, but it's also good to know that we're not going to necessarily lose her. I mean, she's happy playing in the NPL when in the off season. And I think she recently finished a civil engineering degree, so she's probably going to look to do some work in that. So we're not, you know, we're building this squad of local talent that we're not having to worry about, oh, are we going to re-sign, you know, the Emily Van Egmonds and the Katie Stengels and all that sort of stuff every season. So it just looks really good for the W League moving forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. Victory coming off a bit of a trouncing at the hands of Melbourne City over the weekend. Melbourne City winning 4-0 in the Melbourne Derby. I always go into these games where you look at the games and someone's just been absolutely pumped in either a derby or in a result that they shouldn't have had, and think, right, well, one of two things are going to happen. They're either in a slump of form and we're going to get a result against them, or they are going to be burning from that result and then come out and do a number on us. Do you sort of get those nerves, or do you think that this is probably that you can't really take anything from that game against Melbourne City, who are currently leading the table?
No, I don't think you can really take much from the, you know, the Melbourne City shirted Matildas squad that, you know, just is doing so well. But
It's a bit like that, isn't it?
Obviously, they've, you know, there's been quite a few players playing in different World Cup or Olympic qualifiers or whatever we're going through at the moment. So who knows how that'll impact teams like Melbourne City, but for Melbourne Victory, they're a proud club. They're always going to come out and make a game of it.
So that game's on Sunday, February 23rd, 4 p.m. at Number 2 Sports Ground. Andy, what's your prediction for the game scoreline?
I am going to go with a 1-1 draw. I think we'll get something out of it, actually. But again, interesting that, you know, I know there's the whole Number 2 Sports Ground and the girls wanting to have their own crowds and everything, but interesting that they're not playing this as a doubleheader. I thought logistically it would make more sense for Victory and all that sort of stuff, but whoever does the A-League and W-League scheduling is a special individual, so we'll leave it at that.
All right. I sort of think that, and I think we did the exact same thing at the end of last season where we were out of finals contention. We had nothing on the table to really play for in terms of trying to make finals or get to, you know, first place or avoiding Spoons or anything. But there's always the danger where when a team doesn't have anything to play for, that they play without the pressure and they come out and do a scoreline. I feel like we're due one of those. I actually think we're going to get a win this weekend. I'm going to say 2-1 win, similar to the A-League squad. I just think, they're coming off a win and a bye, and I think that they'll try and continue that on, especially if Deansy's back looking after the team for the last couple of weeks of the season. Very quickly, we'll just go through the other fixtures across both leagues. Andy, if you want to just give me a prediction for each of these games. In the A-League, we have Wellington Phoenix against Western United. What do you think is going to happen there in the Mark Rudan derby?
Yeah, Wellington are going to run away with this one. I think Western United are being found out for the ageing squad that they are, and seems to be, I don't know if Rudes is the Jose Mourinho of the A-League, that he lasts so long and then the team just sort of loses it a bit. So, yeah, definitely Wellington will run away with that one.
I agree. I think Wellington, this means a bit more than just 3 points given how their off-season has gone. I think Wellington will win by at least two in that game. Next one, Western Sydney against Adelaide. Western Sydney home game. I think that now Adelaide have come off a win against the Mariners. They left it late, but Mohamed Touré, if he's anything like his brother, I think they've got a couple of gems in their squad. So I think they might cause. I think he in particular might cause the Wanderers some difficulties. What's your scoreline?
Yeah, I think Adelaide will get something out of this one, and we'll get a 2-0 victory.
I think I'm going to say Adelaide 2-1. I think Mitchell Duke and I think his name's Simon Cox, the new striker. I think they're going to link up well. They seem to do that on the weekend. But I think Adelaide with McGree and the Toure's, even though the older one's name got injured at the Olympics. I think Adelaide will still come away with the 3 points there. Brisbane Roar versus Perth Glory. This one's against teams in pretty good form. You wouldn't have said that a couple of weeks ago, Andy. What are you thinking for this one?
Yeah, this may be controversial, but I think we're going to see a win from Brisbane. I believe Perth also have Asian Champions League commitments this week. And Brisbane seem to just be absolutely in form, but then again, Popovich has set up a pretty, you know, healthy squad for rotation as he usually does. But I think Brisbane will come away with a 1-0 victory.
I think it's going to be a very close game, and I think it's going to be a good game. Even with Perth on their with their Champions League duties, I think they'll still get a result. I'm going to say Perth or 2-1. I'm going to say I think it'll be a very tight game and a very good game. The last A-League game of the round, Mariners versus Sydney. First versus last, do you think we're going to see a birdie special?
A Bodie special does not even count towards what this is going to be. This will be a 6-0 victory to Sydney FC.
All right. I'm going to say I think Sydney will win. I think it'll be maybe 2 or 3 nil. I think Beres is I think he'll probably save the Mariners a fair few goals there. And Melbourne City have the bye in the A League. Quickly to the W League, Western Sydney against Melbourne City. This looked like top two a few weeks ago, and Wanderers have been in a slump ever since. Andy, do you think City will storm on, or will Wanderers break their duck?
No, City will run away with this one as always.
Yeah, I reckon City by at least 3 goals. Sydney FC against Perth Glory. Sydney looking to get a top two finish. Perth looking to get a very, oh, I don't even know if it is likely a final spot. Perth without Sam Kerr for this, she hasn't been here all season. Different spot on the table for Perth compared to what they're used to. Do you think Sydney will just continue doing their thing?
Yeah, I don't see too much with Perth this season. They've lost a little bit too much quality in Sam Kerr, and I forget who the other person was that they had that did a lot off Sam Kerr. You just can't replace that kind of quality, unfortunately, in the W League.
And then the final game, Raw versus Canberra. Both fairly inconsistent seasons. How do you see this one going?
I will say a 1-1 draw between these two.
Yeah, I'll say. I think Brisbane might win 2-1. I'll go that. And as we mentioned before, Adelaide United with the bye. Andy, I think that pretty much wraps everything up. Thanks for joining me again tonight. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure as always, Luke. I guess the one last thing that I will pick up too, whilst we got about 30 seconds, is there were NBN reports that Bugard is actively playing for another contract, wants to extend for another season. Not sure how I feel about it. I at first was like, that isn't a really good idea, but then taking into consideration the injury to Lockie Jackson and fairly inconsistent performances from other players in that could come in and do a job there, I guess it's probably not a bad shout if you've got a new coach that's wanting to put in a new system to keep your captain that obviously can come in and do a job and since coming back has done pretty well.
Yeah, no, I did see that on NBN tonight as well. And yeah, I think I'm on the exact same page as you. I a few weeks ago would have been a bit iffy, but I think given how he's performed since he's come back, I think he's definitely up for talks at least on the matter. If people want to find the Jetstream, we invite all listeners to send us any questions, comments, feedbacks, topics that you may have. We are a social media empire. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/JetstreamYui, Twitter at JetstreamYui, Instagram at JetstreamYui. You can also email us at podcast@newcastlefootball.net. You can also join the forums at newcastlefootball.net and go to the Jetstream sub-forum. And all that it leaves us with now is go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
Vamos el Jerkos for you, Mitch.
Oh, I'm down, Benjamin.